let's say there's a universe where I knew I wanted to do marketing, but I didn't have that opportunity to join from another role. I think the easiest way to do that, beyond what you mentioned, networking, learning as much as you can, is try to productize something yourself and market it yourself.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the People Digital Marketing Podcast. Today's guest is Leah Kovac-Margolis, and we are above 145 episodes of the podcast. This podcast is 3 years old. For anyone new who's listening, it's a labor of love, if you will. I'm trying to create a resource for anyone who's aspiring to become a CMO. If not, this is just something that can help you on your day-to-day. Hopefully, you're learning some new tactics, some new things to take into work, to your team meetings, etc. And without further ado, we're just going to dive right in. Hey, Leah, how's it going today?
Yeah, going well. How about you, Kenny?
I'm doing good. I'm excited for this interview. I like to interact with experts in fields, both industry-wise and in functions that I don't have experience in, because it gives me more exposure into what my career can be in the future. I'm only 8 years in my career. I'm still learning. And today, my goal is, and I mentioned this prior to us recording, my goal is to just get a general understanding from your expertise and your background on what does it take to be good at this job, regardless of the function. Before we get into that, I think it's always important to get context. So my first question for you is just in general, how did you even get into digital marketing?
It's a great question. And to what you just mentioned earlier, we're always all learning. I think that's a skill that makes a really good marketer. So, you know, just as much as you're learning, I try to learn something every day. But how I got into marketing to begin with, I had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up, so to speak. In college, I knew that I was really passionate about sort of helping people decide where they wanted to go to school. I worked a lot in my university's office of admission, and I realized that that skill set that I was building was really around sales. And I sort of knew that if I learned sales, that could translate into a lot of different things, but I had no idea what that looked like. At one point, I very seriously considered going to law school. My mind was very open. So I actually started in sales. I worked as a very junior salesperson at a company called Single Platform, and then a sales development representative at Movable Inc. And I got into marketing because my boss and mentor noticed that I was really approaching all of my SDR outreach like a marketing campaign. I was very interested in who that other person was on the other end of the line of my cold call, which I am still cannot believe that I did that. I find cold calling terrifying. But I was always very interested in learning about them. And he took note that I was approaching things like a marketing campaign, and, you know, gave me the chance to take on a couple of side projects. And then from there, that grew into a marketing coordinator role. So that was how I made the leap over to marketing. And really, since that role, I just fell in love with what I do and have stuck with it.
That's awesome. And can you describe to the listeners what it is that you're doing today?
Absolutely. So currently, I'm the director of marketing at a company called Hypar. We are a design automation platform for the building industry. So it's a really fun role because I came in as first marketing hire. Our goal is to, you know, really grow the company, grow the marketing team. So in the future, you know, hoping to hire on additional folks to help share, you know, our mission and really grow. What my role looks like day to day is so many different things. Even just today, it's, you know, 10:43 a.m. Eastern time right now. I've already had one demo call with a journalist. So showing them what the platform does, sort of laying those seeds of PR. I've been discussing with my developers about our new website that we're about to launch. So that was a huge project that I started working on almost immediately, was doing all the persona research and writing copy and laying out this new website. Later in the day-to-day, I have, you know, meetings with other members of my team to produce some video content to support an upcoming launch. And then I also have to finish writing a blog post. So it really runs the gamut. But right now, I'm really focused. Initially, I was focused on a lot of persona research, understanding where we fit in the industry, what we needed to say to drive the company's growth and to reach our market. Now, a lot of the stuff I'm working on is turning that into content.
It's reassuring to hear your side of things. When it comes to all of these different hats that you're wearing and the different tasks that you're doing, could you share with the listeners anything that you're doing right now that you're either doing for the first time, if you're not doing it for the first time, something that you've done in the past, but now you have to grease those wheels again because it's a new environment, new industry, and things are just rapidly changing all the time?
Oh, absolutely. So speaking of greasing the wheels, so this is the second startup that I've been in that's in the AEC space.
Okay.
AEC being architecture, engineering, and construction. There was a lot that I had to catch up on in the industry. In addition to really just learning the product itself, which is a radically different way of approaching design. So that was a lot of learning. I'm also, again, as I mentioned, dipping my toes back into content generation. And in my more recent roles, a lot of what I was doing was mostly editing content produced by others. So even getting back into that mindset of writing and ghost writing for other members of the team, definitely, you know, dusting some wheels off. Things I haven't done before, and part of why this role is super exciting in the company, I've never run a product-led growth, you know, growth mechanism before. Most of the products, with the exception of one that had a free trial component, we didn't do sales through the website. I've never had this sort of PLG element to my career. Everything else I've done has been very sales-led, sales-led SaaS. So that is a totally new learning experience for me, even just figuring out how to hook up all the systems so that when somebody purchases something on their own, it ties into our CRM, right? That's all new for me. And I think that, you know, marketing changes so fast. Again, we're all doing something new. We all have to learn something every day.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this episode and you're a first-time listener, why not hit the follow button? My goal with each of these episodes is to introduce a new marketing concept or dive deeper into one so that you can become a better digital marketer. Hopefully, through these episodes, you join me on this journey, the path to CMO. So, I'd love it if you subscribed. Thanks for listening so far. I want to know, let's say that the listener in this context is interested in digital marketing. They've seen some YouTube videos. They've reached out to some people on LinkedIn to find out what their experience is in the field at different levels of seniority and in different industries. How does someone even get their first marketing job?
Yeah. It's a great question. And I was lucky. I think there are two approaches, right? There's the approach that I did, which was the get in doing something else and then go into marketing, which I think is a really, really great way to do that approach. The other approach, of course, is going straight in for marketing. And I think if I were to go back in my career and perhaps, let's say there's a universe where I knew I wanted to do marketing, but I didn't have that opportunity to join from another role, I think the easiest way to do that, beyond what you mentioned, networking, learning as much as you can, is try to productize something yourself and market it yourself. So one example of this, I did this for fun, and maybe this is really nerdy, but I got married a couple of years ago, and tracking all of the expenses throughout the planning is just a huge process, right? We happened to have a larger wedding. We have a lot of family. So I made a budget template that was a Google Doc for myself. After the wedding was done, I had all these other friends getting engaged and I was sharing it with them. And I was like, you know what? I could turn this into an Etsy store. Like, why not? What is stopping me? So I took an hour or two. I completely anonymized the template. I then created a free account in Canva. I generated a logo for my storefront. Again, these are all things I had never done before. Logo for my storefront. I took some screenshots, mocked it up, made some product imagery for the listing, and I attempted to sell and market it. And it's funny, I learned so much from that experience alone. So I think if you are trying to go at the approach of you've never done marketing before and you really want to do it, find a way to do it yourself. You don't need to be paid and like full-time employed to be a marketer. Sort of on that other side of the fence, being the I'm in a different role and I want to transition to marketing. Of course, building those relationships internally and navigating your own office's sort of culture and dynamics are really important. But I would also really, really recommend that approach, because especially coming from sales, because sales and marketing are so aligned, especially in B2B SaaS, that having that perspective of what your BDR team goes through every day and what it's like to be on a cold call, what people say on the other end of the line, especially if you get the chance to run discovery calls as part of that role, it will make you that much sharper as a marketer, because you've already built this sort of empathy muscle for what your prospect is going through. So if you have the chance, I do think that sales into marketing, again, it's a tougher transition to make because, you know, every company has their own dynamics, job openings, et cetera. But I think the skills that I learned in sales really set me up for success. So would recommend.
Do you think the job search now is more difficult or easier than it was back then, and why?
It's a really interesting question. My gut first response is it's more difficult now just due to the macroeconomic climate that we're in, right? We're just in this weird time. I mean, I myself was caught up in, you know, the very start of the tech layoffs in sort of summer of 2022. So I know how it is. So I think that is making it really challenging and making it all the more challenging to stand out, because there are so many sort of tactics and things that you can do. You have access to so much information. So I would argue that it's more difficult now just because that is creating a challenge. That said, that's temporary, right? I think in the next year or so, things will start to trend in the other direction, and then it will be easier to get that first role.
And let's say that someone's polished their resume, they've done the networking, they've done the education, they've created their own project to showcase that they are at least attempting to learn the skills that they want for the role, or they're actually succeeding and it's showcased very well. Now they're at the interview stage.
And then?
Right. And it's hard to pinpoint all the questions, because once you start going to specific functions like performance versus brand, or someone who's doing content versus demand gen versus conversion rate optimization, even the questions change. But in general, we're all marketers, right?
Yeah.
What questions should a candidate be considering in preparation for an interview? How can they prep for an interview? What should they be thinking about before that meeting starts?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot to think about, but the number one piece of advice I can give is to write down your answers and then practice them in front of a mirror. And there's a couple of reasons for this. I think also, especially if you're interviewing for a remote role, you do have the advantage of having your resources up on screen. So that can serve as a security blanket to maybe help soothe some of the nerves that you feel when interviewing. Also worth acknowledging, it's really natural to be nervous when you're interviewing. I get nervous, right? And I've been doing this for 10 plus years. It's just a human reaction. But having those written answers queued up for you can be really helpful if you start to lose, you know, just lose yourself in the nerves. So that's thing one. And then thing two being practicing those answers in front of a mirror. It just ingrains it in your brain so that by the time you get to the interview, you know what you're saying and it's almost effortless. It also helps you figure out what your tone is like, what your expression is like, and sort of work with that. Like, there's a more human aspect to it when you see yourself doing it. Even better, record yourself doing the answers. Like, set up a Zoom with yourself, join the Zoom, and just answer the questions that you know that they're going to ask. I do think first impressions are really important. And so usually the first question is going to be something along the lines of, well, tell me a little about yourself. And that question is such a perfect opportunity for you to knock it out of the park or completely whiff it. And being candid, I feel like when I interview somebody, that first question will tell me a lot of what I need to know. So, it won't tell me everything, but it will give me a sense for how they communicate. how they process, who they are? And do you want to make that good first impression? So that is a question you can absolutely practice on your own and really, really knock it out of the park, which then once you build that confidence, it just keeps rolling throughout the interview. I don't know about you, Kenny, but I feel like when I'm interviewing, if I answer a question really well and I feel like I've done a good job, that confidence then shines through in my next couple of questions.
Definitely.
Whereas if you get that total curveball, you're like, oh gosh, I don't know what the heck I just said or did. You then go into the next question feeling a little on edge, right? And I think that that can be palpable sometimes. So yeah, knock it out of the park with your first question and practice, practice, practice.
One thing that also showcases how prepared you are, and then because you've done interviews, I'm definitely interested in your perspective here, is when a candidate comes with thoughtful questions for the interviewer. And are there any questions that stand out to you where if someone who's a candidate asks you this, a light bulb goes in your head and you're like, I like this person. They clearly are interested in actually working in this organization and they've done their homework.
Yeah, that's a great question. I hesitate to give sort of a question list because I think best questions are the result of very active listening and of then translating that into your working experience. And you don't have to have had the job to do that. But as you're going throughout the interview, they will inevitably say some things about the nature of the team, who's on the team, how they work with other people, what the day-to-day of the job is like, that you really probably want to dig into. So those are the questions that always stand out for me are the sort of not canned questions. They're the ones that demonstrate that somebody listened to what I said and they really thought about it. I'm also, during an interview, I like to keep them conversational. So sometimes those questions do come up in the course of the actual interview itself and sort of before that time where they say, okay, great. You know, do you have any further questions for me? So I'll add that as a disclaimer. If you ask it in the moment, that can also make a really big impact. The one sort of default question that I always love to hear is a very confident and robust, like, thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed speaking, you know, with you. I'm really interested in the role. And I want to know if there's anything about my candidacy that would hold you back from moving forward.
That's a great one.
Because what it does, I think thing number one, if you deliver that really well, it shows a lot of confidence in yourself and just in what you want and in your ability. But then thing two, you should get immediate feedback that helps you either figure out how to ace your next interview, if this one might not be the right fit, or you will figure out if you've kind of knocked it out of the park, right? And sometimes your interviewer, again, this is challenging, the person giving the interview might not be as socially bold or open, so they might not come out and say exactly why something didn't go that well. But I think reading into that a bit, like, don't obsess over it, don't hyperfixate on it, but sort of notice how their tone comes through as they're answering that question. Because I've certainly had chances where I've interviewed, I've asked the question, I've received a no, you seem, you know, you're a great candidate for this role. And then at the end of the process, I get feedback from the recruiter or, you know, whoever else that says, you know, actually, this was misaligned, right? So it's not foolproof, but it can help you. It can help you get some answers.
And there's this team dynamic where I've experienced this myself, where I'm not necessarily someone who's interviewing candidates, but my manager will come to me for my opinion when before he even like does his first round. He's like, here's 20 resumes that he's sifted through 400.
Yeah.
Right? What do you think of these 20 resumes? So it's not just his decision. He's asking for advice from other stakeholders that will potentially work with the candidate once they're hired. So that's the other thing the listener needs to keep in mind is you can be great, but there's one, this team of people that are making the decision, not just the people that are interviewing you. And two, there's other candidates. And you have to make the decision that's best for the business.
And those other candidates can also be great, right? You can fully ace your interview. You can knock it out of the park. someone else could also knock it out of the park and they just hit a home run that's, you know, 10 feet farther,
yeah.
right? So that's the other, I think, especially in this really tight market, is the key thing to remember. Like, sometimes you have done the best that you could and you're so close, right? So not getting discouraged is also a really big, you know, a big part of that, that job search process in general.
Ideally, you get hired, whether it's with your first interview and you get your top choice company, or there's multiple companies you have to have conversations with, you get that job. Regardless of the function, the next challenge is doing the job well. And you've made a good first impression because you got hired, but now you need to continue building upon that impression during your first quarter. That can be both difficult and easy depending on the context of the business, what stage you're in, what industry you're in, etc. You've worked in businesses that are, and correct me if I'm wrong here, for both early stage and up to Series C, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
What are the different marketing challenges between each stage or at each stage?
No matter what size company you are at, I think thing number one to set yourself up for success is very clear alignment with your manager and leadership on either your OKRs for the quarter or a 30, 60, 90 plan. I prefer the OKR route if that's how your company does goal setting, because a 30, 60, 90 just always ends up being wrong. I've never drafted a 30, 60, 90 or even lived through one as the person doing it, where I get to the 90 and I'm like, oh, well, that's exactly linearly how this went. So I think no matter what size company, just being very clearly aligned on what you need to achieve is really, really critical. Now, your initial question about the marketing sort of challenges at each different size company. So at the very, very early startup stage, a lot of what you're doing is building systems and processes for the first time. So it's sort of naturally, calling back to your earlier question about what are you dusting the wheels off of, in this case, you're building the wheel. So that always takes a little bit longer and is challenging in unanticipated ways. And I think that is the biggest challenge to early stage marketing. I'm going through this myself right now. I'm trying to put together a webinar series. We've never really done a webinar before. And even something as simple as figuring out, okay, do I have the right Zoom license to be able to do this? Right? How do I host this? What are the technical challenges? Ignore the content, which is actually the most important part. Like, how do I even make this happen? So that in an early stage is really what you'll see. And then when you start to get later on, let's say Series C, the challenge then becomes how do you... You have all your systems in place. So it becomes, how do you keep your content and your ideas and your campaigns fresh and innovative? And other challenge that comes along with that is also just navigating how to put that together internally, right? Usually by the time you get to that stage, every marketing team, people become highly specialized, right? When you're early stage, I'm the moderator, I'm tech support, I'm the graphic designer, I'm running the campaign to promote and get the attendees there. I'm the co-host. I'm doing a lot. By the time that you get into that role at a, you know, Series B or C company, you are just executing on certain pieces. So being very conscious of internal processes, finding ways to make them better, but then also keeping the content really fresh, I think is the biggest challenge. And then, you know, if you're in between, if you're sort of in that Series A to Series B, it's somewhere in between, right? It's both figuring out processes and then also keeping it fresh while juggling 10 million other things on your plate, because you're probably in that spot where you have to do a little bit of everything with limited resources.
I'm going to ask a selfish question because it's a challenge that I'm facing right now. So I'm 8 years in my career. So 7 years before this year, I was only focused on being good at understanding marketing. That's it. Tactics, campaigns, and now strategy, operations, how do you work with a team, how do you grow as a manager, etc. I'm now understanding that there's this whole other world of advantages that you can get as a marketer when you start understanding how business works and functions. And this question is in two parts, or technically it's two questions. Let's start off here. What advantages can a marketer get when they get a better understanding of how the institution, how the organization works. Because this seems obvious, but I want you to like paint the picture of like, what advantages can you get for your career if you understand how your team functions?
Yeah. So there's sort of two immediate things that come to mind. I think number one being, if you innately understand other parts of the business well, you will then be able to turn that back to your team and have better success for your team. That is thing number one, right? Understanding how other teams function, maybe observing where things fall short. That gives you areas to optimize, not only like say, hey, like maybe I can help with this part of the business, but also optimize your own team around it too, right? And then ultimately, especially in SaaS, it should all come together in service of your customer and of prospects. And it tends to do that very nicely. So thing number one is you can just boost performance for the company and your own team. Thing number two, and you know, I think it's no secret that marketers are sort of the, I don't want to use like the neglected executive in the boardroom, but that the role is often thought of as being sort of touchy-feely, it's squishy, you know, all you do all day is just write ebooks or webinars, and how does that impact the business, right? So the more that you are able as a marketing leader to demonstrate that cross-functional, cross-business knowledge, I think the more seriously you will be taken and the more you can then advocate on behalf of yourself and your team to then drive more marketing success. Really underlying that is a key understanding of the metrics that drive the business. But again, it also always comes down to like people and processes too. So I think, you know, in short, it's all about driving performance, and you can do that in a couple of different ways. But I think banishing that stereotype of, oh, you know, what's the CMO doing, right? That
you can increase the performance of your team and better advocate for what marketing is doing. Those are two advantages when it comes to understanding how a company and organization works. Are those advantages still present, or are there other advantages to having industry knowledge and commercial acumen?
Yeah. And Kenny, by that, do you mean sort of, is it beneficial to know what's going on in the broader industry that you're trying to sell into?
For example, like as you gain more knowledge and freshen up on AEC, right? How does that give you an advantage as a marketer?
It's funny because when I look back at my career, I do think one of the things that's helped build me into the marketer I am today was jumping a bit between industries, because you start to draw these common threads between how a SaaS operation should run. I think when it's now then interesting to go back into the same industry for the first time in my career and see what's changed. But I think it gives you an immediate leg up in terms of understanding your ICP and who you're talking to. So no matter, I think the takeaway there is no matter what industry you're working in, and no matter your job function on the marketing team, like I don't care if you're, you know, the content marketing person, in which case you better know what they're thinking about day in, day out, or if you're the marketing operations person, the more that you know the industry that you are targeting, the better. Like there is no downside to understanding the industry. So, you know, if you find an industry that you're very, very passionate about, stick with it. That's great. But don't discount sort of the perks of and the learnings that can come from learning different industries as well.
I can't speak to architecture, engineering, construction. I'm not in that world. However, when I started to specialize within fintech and insurance, I realized one quick and easy way for marketers at any level to start gathering industry experience quickly is the fact that almost every marketing team in the B2B sense, even though I'm B2C, the B2B sense, right? They're having podcasts about their industry. So I can go and search fintech podcasts or insurance podcasts and immediately start gathering information on how this industry works. Understanding that part of the goal of these podcasts is to sell me software for my startup, but that's okay because my benefit from a marketing perspective is I'm just understanding how this industry works. And I think it's very important to find those resources. And if you don't want to read, which you should too, you want to read, like, for example, I work in insurance, so I'm trying to my best to understand investor relation documents from like Progressive and Liberty Mutual, because then I can understand like these metrics like loss ratio, for example, which I didn't even know was a thing until I started doing that. But if you don't want to read, podcasts, YouTube, on LinkedIn, everyone's trying to showcase how smart they are. So you can also leverage that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's worth spending. Even going into an interview process, not just once you've gotten the job, but before you've gotten the job, doing that research, you know, of course, it's sort of table stakes to research the company that you're interviewing in.
Absolutely.
But having that broader industry view, it can never hurt you. It can only help you.
That's certainly true. I have three more questions for you. When is the right time to walk away from a company?
That is a really good question. I think the metric that I've used in my past to know when to walk away has been when I felt like I wasn't learning anymore. And part of that could have been on me. Maybe I had lost the motivation to learn more. And then that prompts the sort of soul questioning of like, why is that? But if you feel stuck, I think that can usually be a pretty good trigger. Also wouldn't discount those external factors, right? Like external factors, something like, you know, layoffs happening, of course, that's out of your control, but even broader industry factors as well. One company that I was at earlier in my career was very severely impacted by the COVID pandemic. And I had been tracking the pandemic fairly early on, like as early as January. Total aside, I majored in international relations in college. I was super interested in just how the world worked. I had really been following the World Health Organization for many years and was just really interested in epidemics. So I was following along early on, and I was like, this is weird. Something's really going on here. And by the time that it rolled around to February, I could kind of see the cracks were starting to show. And I started interviewing very proactively at that point because I said, you know what? It's only a matter of time until this gets to New York. We have no idea what's going to happen. So I kicked off that interview process a bit earlier. That was very much a time where an external factor did really play into my career, right? I could see the writing on the wall, and I knew I needed to make a leap. So I think it can be both things, but if you feel like you aren't learning anymore, question why you feel like you aren't learning anymore. And if it's because either you're not interested, you're burned out on it, you're not bought in, or if it's because of some factor, like, you know, there just simply isn't that role available on your team for you to grow into, or, you know, there's a lot of reasons, but that digging into that will always be instructive.
Yeah, I think he's now the president of Y Combinator. For the listener, I'm sorry if I'm getting this wrong, but Gary Tan is a famous investor in Silicon Valley. And he has a quote that I always remember where he's like, if you're going into a company, you need to learn, earn, ideally both. If you don't get any, that's not the right company to join. Best way to think about it. If you're not learning, earn, because we got to pay bills. And it's always good if you're making six figures or more, hats off to you. But ideally, you're doing both earning a good salary, ideally equity, and you're learning so that you can be better and enjoy your job. When it comes to just taking a step back, not just being a marketer, but again, that business knowledge, right? I'm interested in getting an MBA one day, but when I see the price point for an MBA these days, it scares me, right? But people are still getting MBAs. So I just want to know, is it worth going to business school?
I would say yes. I will add a couple of caveats. And the experiences I'm pulling from here, I did a part-time MBA program through NYU. A couple of folks in my family have done a full-time program. And Again, starting in different career paths, different industries, all these wide factors considered. I think if money is no object, which is not the case for most people, but let's say that you can find a way to pay for grad school, a full-time program is a great way to really immerse yourself in those learnings. If you're looking, if you're getting a little bit of sticker shock, I think a part-time program is a really incredible option because you're doing both at the same time, right? You're making income, you're paying bills. Yeah, you still have to pay for school, but at least you're not losing one in service to the other. And I do think that the degree at the end of the day has been worth it for my career. Since getting that degree, really since starting business school when I did, I've more than doubled my salary. And I could make the argument that that could have happened without the MBA happening, right? None of the roles that I've been in all have been MBA optional, so it's never required. But what a part-time MBA does, I think more than the full-time, is that it really forces you to get crystal clear on how you spend your time and on how you prioritize. And it has all these trickle-down effects into the rest of your life, right? My communication style is forever changed based on that, because at one period in my life, I was doing a part-time MBA. I was working, managing a team of 4 or 5 folks, and I was also planning a wedding. I did not have time to do anything other than those things. And what that forced me to do as both a leader was I had to be very deliberate in how I spent my time. That trickled into how I communicated and also into how I managed. So long story short, I think a part-time MBA is a great forcing function to give yourself a crash course on time management and on juggling multiple things that are both really, really important. It's mini executive boot camp in a way that, you know, I don't think that the full-time experience is for most people, right? You can make it that if you go full-time, but I also not know a lot of people who went full-time and were like, man, best 2 years of partying of my life, right? We're going to yacht week in Croatia, and now I have 5 international weddings, and that's great and lovely, and like, go travel and have fun. It's just a different experience.
I might have to consider doing part-time. Okay. Thank you for that. Now, my last question for you is hypothetical, because time machines don't exist. But if you had access to one, could go back into the past about 10 years, knowing everything you know right now, how would you specifically accelerate the speed of your career?
I've thought about this before, and I think my answer has evolved over time, but if I could go back 10 years, the thing I would have invested in learning the most about at that time was persona research. And here's why. My first role in marketing came out of an SDR role. So it was innate to me that I understood who I was talking to, right? I didn't have to do any research into, what market are we serving? Because it was just so part of my prior job at the company. And when I think about that first role that I got after joining a totally new company, you know, you don't know what you don't know. A lot of my role, and this was when I went from Movable Ink to Iris VR specifically, a lot of my time at Movable Ink, I was touching a lot of different parts of the business, and I had those good relationships from being an SDR and just from being with the company as it went through a tremendous growth phase. But I knew how to create content, do email newsletters, and be really strong in marketing automation. I did not understand at that stage how sort of personas played into all this, how sort of what the wider market was, really what even broader marketing functions were and the strategy behind what we were doing. I was, you know, working with a team of 6 people. And so it was just always innately there. And then the next role that I took was being the first marketing hire at a very small startup. And I didn't know what I didn't know. I knew I had to learn the industry, but I just didn't do enough. And I think if I had took time to do so much more of that research and to really dig in when I didn't know something. I think I could have accelerated my career in that role and in other roles thereafter. So it all comes down to understanding who you're talking to.
I love that. And that's universal, really, across industries. I work in B2C, so across business models. I like that. That's awesome. Leah, if anyone wanted to say hello to you online, where can they go?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on LinkedIn. Pretty easy to find. That's other career pro tip. Optimize your LinkedIn profile. Happy to chat. Like, DM me if you have questions, but that can be a huge boost. So I'm on LinkedIn. I also can be reached via email. My email is listed on my LinkedIn. So, you know, I'm kind of always online, as I think most of us are. So feel free to reach out to me there.
Thanks for your time today. And we'll definitely put your information in the show notes. And thanks to you, the listener, for listening to another episode of the People Digital Marketing Podcast. As always, this is a free show. However, I have a favor to ask, and it comes in three parts. If you've done one or two, or ideally all three, this is not for you. If it's your first time listening or your second time listening, you know the gist of this. First, please subscribe to this podcast. It's the best way for this podcast to grow and to get new subscribers. Two, rate this podcast, ideally 5 stars. If not, I'm always open to constructive feedback. And three, if you have a coworker who's a marketer who you think would benefit from conversations like these, please share it with them, because the best way for all of us to learn is together. And as always, I hope everyone has a great week.